this morning is the heart of a shepherd. We have children, we have a spouse, we have friends, we have colleagues, we have acquaintances and other people who are in need, sometimes total strangers who are in need of our encouragement. And this morning, as you can see up there, we'll be looking at the conclusion of this time that we've had together. This is the last of the 13 weeks. We'll be looking at the conclusion, Every Heart, the Heart of a Shepherd. Well, this is the part of these shepherding messages where I usually challenge you to give yourself to the gift of the 23rd Psalm for Christmas. And during the 13 weeks that we've been in this study, I've said that over and over, and then I challenged you to quote it to someone to check your accuracy. Those were the two challenges that were out there. Now, I don't want to embarrass those who didn't make the time to memorize it, but in fairness to those who did take the time to memorize it, I want to recognize them. And even if I don't know who you are, I've never understood that we recognize people in church. First-timers, we have them stand up, you know, and because we want to recognize them, and they stand up, I don't recognize them. They're here for the first time, but that's neither here nor there. We do want to recognize you, though, if you did take the time, make the time to memorize. So if you memorized the 23rd Psalm and then quoted it to someone else, could you just raise your hand, put your hand up? You memorized the 23rd Psalm and quoted it to somebody else. Put your hands up nice and high. Come on. All right. Keep your hands up. If you memorized the 23rd Psalm but didn't quote it to somebody else for some reason, would you raise your hand? Just keep your, and if everybody that's memorized the 23rd Psalm, quoted it, and come on, put your, I need to see this. I really need to see this. Okay. See, a lot of you I don't recognize, but thank you for raising your hand despite my inadequacy. For those of you who didn't make the time to memorize the 23rd Psalm, you still have almost 3 weeks left before Christmas, so you can still give yourself that gift, and almost 4 weeks left in the year. And if you still can't get it done in that amount of time, then you could turn memorizing the 23rd Psalm into a New Year's resolution, because we all know how helpful those are. And if you make it a New Year's resolution, then we can be sure that you would at least memorize the first verse of the 23rd Psalm before you decide to break all your New Year's resolutions on January 2nd. But if you did that, by then you'd at least have the first verse of the 23rd Psalm memorized, and you'd be able to say to yourself, because the Lord is my shepherd, I have everything that I need. And even if that's all you take away from this series, you'd be able to say that to yourself over and over throughout 2021, and that wouldn't be a bad way to spend the year. That'd be a good way to spend the year, especially if things don't turn around quite as quickly as we'd like. So please don't let this challenge die without taking it up, so that you'll be able to reach down into your heart and remind yourself of the truths of the 23rd Psalm at any time, even at those times when life is at its darkest. That's the beauty of memorizing. I've regretted taking the time to watch some movies. Has that ever happened to you, where you took a couple hours to watch a movie and then realize that's 2 hours you're never going to get back? Oh my goodness, why did I do that? I can tell you that I've never regretted a single moment that I've spent memorizing God's Word. I never have. Because the movie keeps coming back, you know, like indigestion does. But God's Word does the same thing without it being indigestion. It comes back at the moments when we need it, because the Spirit of God is able to prompt our hearts with the truth. But He can only prompt our hearts with the truth if the truth is there. David wrote it, "I've hidden your word in my heart so that I might not sin against you." Hidden in his heart. I want to begin this morning by telling you a story from God's word. And I want to tell you the story that helped us to start this whole series, all these discussions that we've had about the 23rd Psalm. I told you the story at the beginning, so it only seems fitting to tell it to you again here at the end. It's the story of a little shepherd boy who took on a mighty giant. With that background, this is the story from God's Word, from 1 Samuel chapter 17. The battle lines were drawn. The Philistines were attacking Israel again and had gathered at Soko in Judah. And King Saul and the men of Israel had assembled and camped above the valley of Elah, which you can see right there. That's where this story took place. They stood facing one another across that valley, across that gap, and the Philistines were over on that other side along that ridge, and well, the battle lines were drawn. The challenge had been laid down. But this time was a little different than other times when the Philistines had attacked, because this time the Philistines had a secret weapon. Yeah, I can't imagine a giant Filipino, but the Philistines had a secret weapon. Their secret weapon wasn't a smart bomb. It wasn't a stealth bomber. But for their day, the secret weapon that they had was every bit as effective as either one of those things. You see, the Philistines had a giant. His name was Goliath. He was a man who was over 9 feet tall. 9 feet 9 inches tall, to be exact, and probably weighed somewhere between 600 and 700 pounds. We're not sure of that. We do know that his armor, the brass armor that he wore, weighed 125 pounds. So, we know that he probably weighed something over 200 if he was going to go into Battle Hall and something like that. He was massive, and he was powerful. He had outfought and overpowered and outlasted everyone, every man in the Philistine army. He was their champion. And Saul and the army of Israel faced the Philistines across the valley. And as they did that, Goliath made his way down from the crowd up above, the crowd of Philistine soldiers, and began to walk down into the valley of Elah. And I don't know if you can appreciate that, but that must have been something to see, especially if it was your job, at least in part, to take on this guy. When he was at the bottom of the valley, he shouted a challenge to the army of Israel. What's the point of going to battle? What's the point of going to war? He shouted to everybody that was standing up on that other side. I'm a Philistine soldier, and you're servants of Saul. You serve Saul in the army of Israel. So here's my challenge. Choose a man. Send him down into this valley and let him fight me. If that man kills me, we will become your servants. But if I kill him, then you will become our servants. And then he raised his voice and began to scream, "This day I defy the ranks of the army of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight." No one responded to the challenge with anything other than pure terror. On the Israelite side, on the side of Israel, no one stood up. Every man went back to his tent. And that morning, Goliath went back to his tent with no challenger to take him on. That afternoon, he was back again. The days that lay ahead, Goliath repeated this challenge every day, twice a day, for 40 days. 40 days, twice a day. In the meantime, back in a little town called Bethlehem, there's a young man, probably somewhere around 17 years old, to the best of our knowledge. He'd only recently been secretly anointed as the next king of Israel. His name was David, and he was the son of a man named Jesse. Jesse's three oldest sons had followed Saul into the battle, to war, and David, the youngest of the eight boys, was still at home taking care of the sheep. One morning, Jesse called for David and told him to take some food and supplies to the army of Israel, where his three oldest brothers were engaged in battle along with the other soldiers. And early the next morning, David left the flock in the care of one of the shepherds that worked for his family, and he headed for the Valley of Elah. And just as David arrived, the army of Israel was moving into their battle positions, and they were raising the battle cry. I don't know if any of you guys remember being 17, but that would get your blood going, wouldn't it? Woohoo! Here we go. You know, we're going to take on the enemy. And David had a front row seat for the whole thing. The army of Israel faced off against the army of the Philistines, just as they had every morning for the last 40 days, and David sorted out the food and left it with the guy that was in charge of the food, and then he hurried to where he would meet with his brothers and talk with them. And as he was talking with them, Goliath made his way down into the valley, and he made his 81st appearance there at the bottom of the valley. Shouted his usual defiance, and this time, David heard it. The next thing David knew, all the warriors of Israel were in full retreat. Afraid of Goliath, afraid of his ranting challenge, they were headed back and running away. And David overheard the men that were talking about this. There were some stragglers left along the edge of the valley, and they were talking about all that King Saul was offering to the man who killed Goliath. The man who killed the giant would be given great wealth, and he would marry one of the king's daughters. And if that wasn't enough, his family would never pay taxes for the rest of forever. And all of that sounded like a pretty good deal to David. It would sound like a pretty good deal to me. David asked around some more just to double check, and he was told the same thing by numerous people. The king will enrich any man who kills Goliath. David by now is confused. The king had offered, listen to this. The king had offered great reward for doing something that very badly needed to be done. But despite that, no one was taking on the challenge of taking down Goliath. David looked down into the valley and asked in a loud voice, "Who is this Philistine that he should be allowed to defy the armies of the living God?" You know, I don't know how many soldiers stood around. Look at him, David. I mean, that's kind of a silly question. I don't know if any of that went on, but it was an important question. Remember, David's the youngest of eight brothers, and the three oldest were wearing the uniform of the army of Israel, and they were there among the troops that day. And you know, it's the Bible, so you would expect the big brothers to be acting appropriately, but the oldest, Eliab, just kind of gets in David's face, his baby brother. "What are you doing here?" Eliab says to him. "And who's taking care of those few sheep that we have back at home? I know how conceited you are, you little snot. You turd. The only reason that you're here is to watch the battle." Encouraging words from your older brother. "What did I ever do to you?" David said. Can't I even talk to people?" David then turned to another one of the soldiers and asked him why Goliath was being allowed to defy the armies of the living God. Soon, word got to Saul that somebody there in the group was, after everybody else had run away, there was one guy standing on the edge, trash-talking the giant. And Saul made it clear that he needed to meet this guy. "Send him to me. I want to know who he is." So they took David to Saul's tent, and David got right to it. "No one," David says, "should lose heart or lose courage because of this Philistine. I'll be the one to go and fight him. I'll go right down into the valley and fight it." You can't fight that mountain. You can see Saul scratching his head. "You can't fight that mountain of a man," Saul said. "You're only a boy. And that guy down there, he's been a warrior since he was your age. He's been a champion since he was your age." But David wouldn't be dissuaded. Saul couldn't talk him out of it. "I'm your servant," David said. "And I've been keeping sheep for a while now. You know, contrary to how young I appear to be, on different occasions, a lion or a bear came and stole one of the sheep. And I went after both the lion and the bear. And I rescued the sheep and I saved the life of the sheep before it could be killed or eaten. And this Philistine, this guy's going to be no different than a wild animal because he has defied the armies of the living God. God delivered me from both the lion and the bear. And he'll deliver me from that giant's hand. And he'll do it in the same way." There's just something about David in that moment that just convinced Saul. "Go," Saul says, "and the Lord be with you as you go." David took his sling and his shepherd's staff, that crooked thing and the rod that he used for attacking animals that were going to attack the sheep. And he went down to a nearby stream and he chose five smooth stones. He put the stones into his bag there, his shepherd's bag, and he headed for the edge of the valley where the giant waited. And Goliath noticed, as David started down, Goliath noticed that someone had finally taken his challenge. Someone had finally started over the valley's edge to accept this challenge that he had put out. And Goliath moved towards this soldier, this champion from Israel, whoever he was, that had finally found the courage to fight him after all this time, all these weeks of taunting. That's when Goliath noticed that this soldier was only a boy and a shepherd at that. He was young and healthy and good-looking, and he was handsome. Goliath despised this boy that had been sent to do a man's job as he scowled at him. And seeing the shepherd's staff and rod in David's hands, Goliath shouted at him, "You think I'm a dog? Are you planning to chase me away with sticks? Is that what you're going to do?" And then Goliath cursed David by the Philistine gods. "Come to me," Goliath shouted, growled, "and I will give your body to the vultures and the scavengers." David paused. That would have given anybody pause. And then he responded. You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of Yahweh, the Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today, David went on, Yahweh will hand you over to me, and I will strike you down and kill you. Today, I will give the carcasses of the entire Philistine army to the vultures and the scavengers. Today, the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel, and all these men gathered here behind me will know that it is not by spear or sword that Yahweh saves, for the battle is Yahweh's, and he will give all of you into our hands. The giant made his move. He rushed toward David so that he could attack him with his sword. David, in the meantime, began running toward the giant, not away in the other direction. He reached into his shepherd's bag and he took out a stone, fitted it into his sling, and began to swing it over his head as he ran. He let the stone fly, finally, and it found its way to the giant's forehead and embedded there. The giant slumped to his knees and fell face down on the ground. David had defeated the giant warrior without even carrying a sword into battle. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they turned and ran, and the army of Israel set off in hot pursuit, and God gave the army of Israel a victory that day, and that victory began at the moment when David, that 17-year-old shepherd boy, trusted God to win the battle for him and the army of Israel, and that is the story from God's word. Last time we looked at that story, we concluded that David was a shepherd. We remembered that. And we also concluded that a shepherd is not a wishy-washy counselor type who makes people feel better when they fail. And we said that because along the valley there where this battle took place, there were gathered warriors and champions and, well, even a giant. But David, this is so cool, David the shepherd boy was the baddest dude there. Of course, it was God's strength that was flowing through him, but there was nothing wishy-washy about David that day. And there's nothing wishy-washy about the 23rd Psalm. David was a shepherd. And from the heart of that man of such gentle strength came these powerfully encouraging words. Because the Lord is my shepherd, I have everything that I need. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the dark valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because you are with me. Your rod and your staff comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. Surely, your goodness and your love will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Over the last 12 weeks, we've looked at those words from two related angles. First, the 23rd Psalm, we said, expresses the kinds of things that we can expect, that I can expect to be true in my life, in you and yours, because the Lord is our shepherd, because the Lord is my shepherd. That's how it begins. And second, the 23rd Psalm expresses the kind of things the people under my care, the people around me, the people under my influence can expect to be true in their lives because I am their shepherd. You are their shepherd, and these are the things they have a right to expect. In other words, we have the privilege of shepherding other people in the same way that God shepherds us. And so as we looked at the various thoughts and themes of the 23rd Psalm, we organized those thoughts and themes into 10 principles. 10 principles of shepherding. And each week, I've quickly listed the principles, you know, there at the beginning as we've already, you know, the ones that we covered, they've gone up there on the screen one after the other, and I just read quickly through it. And this morning, rather than reading quickly through it, I'll take a couple of minutes with each of them to remind you the sort of things that we talked about relative to each one of these principles. So if you missed a Sunday or you've just forgotten what happened more than 2 weeks, how many have slept in the last 2 weeks? Well, see, there you go. You forget everything when you sleep. But anyway, let's take a look at 10 principles of shepherding. Principle number one, if I'm a shepherd, it's because I'm aware of the needs of the sheep and seek to meet them. I think that we'd all agree, have to admit, that seeking to meet someone's needs is not as simple as we'd like to believe. But becoming aware of a person's need really is not too complicated at all. At least that's where we began this idea. Perhaps you remember that I told you a story back then about a day when Irma Bombeck was traveling home by plane. She's at the departure gate, and she's just trying to get lost in the book. She had been lecturing and working on this work vacation. It wasn't really a vacation. It was a work away from home. And now she's just going home, and she just wants to get some rest. As she's sitting there, she's aware of the crowd, but not just trying to tune out. And suddenly she heard the voice of an older woman that was sitting, it sounded like across from her, say out loud, "This is the first time I've traveled by plane." When Irma looked up, she saw that the woman was traveling alone, just like she suggested, but that she hadn't said that to anyone in particular. So Irma put down her book and asked the woman why this was the first time she was traveling by plane. And then Irma listened, really listened, to this dear old woman's answer. "Well, my husband and I usually travel in our RV, and we take it with us. And we took it with us when we went on this trip. We live in Ohio, and we're all the way out here in Denver, and we've been staying in our RV, and we'd started our trip back home, but yesterday morning, my husband had a heart attack, and I did all that I knew how to do, but he was pronounced dead when the EMTs got to our campsite. And now today, I'm on my way back home, and my husband of 50 years is in the cargo hold. My family's going to meet me at the airport and we'll begin to plan his funeral." And Irma sat there and listened to the story that the woman told. Finally, it was time for Irma to board her plane, but the woman told her that she'd be on a later flight that left from this same gate and that she was just going to sit there. And so Irma gave her a hug. They were allowed to do that back then. Irma gave her a hug, and with tears in her eyes, she began walking toward the jetway. Another person occupied the seat that Irma had been sitting in, and as Irma walked away, she saw and heard the old woman say again, to no one in particular, "This is the first time I've traveled by plane." Irma said that she breathed a silent prayer that someone was listening to that heartbroken woman. We may not always be able to meet the needs of sheep under our care. There was no way to meet the needs that woman was experiencing that day. But 90%, please understand this, 90% of meeting someone's need is listening to them as they tell their story, really listening to them. So let's learn to listen, we said back then, to the sheep under our care so that we can seek to meet their needs, because the Lord is my shepherd. I have everything I need. And so do you. Principle number two. If I'm a shepherd, it's because I ease the burden of the sheep. I told you the story of a little gas station in the small town of Cordon in Isabela province in the Philippines. And it was late at night, and I'd been driving a vehicle that had no brakes. I don't know if you remember that story. I certainly do. We finally got into the vehicle. We finally got the vehicle stopped at a place where we were ready to abandon it overnight. It was a little gas station in the middle of nowhere. And as we made arrangements to leave the vehicle there so that Steve Hagen, my son-in-law, could come and pick it up in the next few days, I began to find another way to get us to Manila. My tension level had gone from a simmer to a boil at that point. The enemy was attacking on such a level that I'd reached the conclusion that there was no way that I was going to get to Manila in time to get to the airport the next morning to catch my flight to Singapore. And if I missed that flight to Singapore, then I would miss my flight back to the U.S. because there was only about 5 hours that separated the two in terms of when I was supposed to leave. So I had already reached the conclusion that I wasn't going to get home when I thought. I was lost in thought. and concern, trying to sort it all out, as I walked into that little gas station thinking that maybe I'd get a cup of coffee, and then something broke into my distracted thoughts. It just kind of washed over me. I heard the sound of music coming from the little tiny tinny speakers up above me there in the gas station, and I was surprised to notice that the song was in English. But even more surprisingly, it was a hymn, an old hymn that I knew when I was still a child. So I was equally surprised to hear an old hymn. And as I stood transfixed there, trying to stir that little cup of coffee that I have, at that moment, I heard the words, though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, let this blessed assurance control, that Christ has regarded my helpless estate and has shed his own blood for my soul. It is well with my soul. And in the depths of my heart, I swear, I heard God say, Jay, I've got this. I was carrying a heavy burden as I walked into that gas station, and I was no longer carrying it when I walked out, because my shepherd had eased my burdens. He had picked it up for me. And we have the privilege of easing the burdens of sheep under our care, because he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul, and he does the same for you. Principle number three. If I'm a shepherd, it's because I keep the sheep on course for the glory of God. I told you the story of when I was hiking at Haha Tonka, the very first time I went hiking after we came back from the Philippines over there at Turkey Pen Hollow Trail. Now, the name, a lot of you may not realize this, but the name Haha Tonka comes from the Osage language, where Haha Tonka means funny little toy truck. Anyway, we were home from the Philippines, and I decided to just, you know, hike there that morning. It was the first time, and after thousands of hours in the hiking in the jungles and in the mountains there in the Philippines, in places where you can't even see the sky, you know, it's that complicated in terms of the sun. But I had always been able to find my way over there. But here at Haha Tonka, I made the mistake of getting off the trail to sit under this big oak tree. Maybe you remember the story. And when I got up from there and tried to get back to the trail, it had just disappeared, vaporized, vanished, and I was lost. I can honestly say that I wasn't so much scared as I was embarrassed at that point, because I'd hiked through the jungles of the Philippines and now it was going to be in the newspapers and everywhere that this old guy was lost in a place called Haha Tonka. Anyway, I stopped to gather my bearings and I heard what sounded like a chainsaw way off there in the distance, and without a trail, I moved cross country, you know, stepping over fallen trees, and I finally came up behind a man who was working on the trail with a weed eater. He just, this was the noise that had drawn me to him. He was kind enough to point me towards home, even though giving directions wasn't in his job description. It wasn't part of his responsibility. You know, when you're lost, it's a great relief to run into somebody, anybody who knows the way home. Anybody. If I'm on course in my personal life, then I can help other people to get on course in their personal life, even though for the time they may have lost their way. And I don't need a seminary degree to do that. I just have to learn from my shepherd, because he leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And he leads you too. Principle number four. If I'm a shepherd, it's because I comfort the sheep when they're afraid. In the context of this principle, I told you the story about the longest night of my life. We were living in the tribe when our daughter Jennifer, who was seven at the time, David was five, Bethany was just two, and Jennifer got sick way out there in that remote place, away from doctors, away from advice. We had a two-way radio, and we had talked to some doctors and nurses, but couldn't figure out what was wrong. And then there came that night when she began hallucinating and seeing things in the room that just weren't there, and felt so hot to the touch. And so Faith took her temperature, and it didn't measure on the thermometer. It was off the scale of the thermometer. So that means it was above 106 degrees. We flew her out of the tribe, and we rushed her to the hospital, where they took the time to do a complete a blood workup on her and other things, and we discovered that her blood count was 8 when she arrived there, and 2 hours later it was 7.2. In another few hours it had dropped below 5, and By that night, it had fallen to 3.6. She was so weak that when she sat up, she couldn't see. And if she tried to stand at all, she'd just pass out. She was dying before our very eyes as we stood helplessly by our bed. That night, I had my first experience with a full-blown kidney stone attack. And by sunrise, our world had officially fallen apart. Well, during that night, I can freely admit to you that I was afraid of what might happen. I was afraid because I was doubting God as he led us through the dark valley of the shadow of death. In the end, God sent along a pediatric hematologist, a blood specialist for children. Who even knew that those existed? A pediatric hematologist. He treated her for malaria and ordered a transfusion of 2 units of blood. And by 10 o'clock that night, she's sitting up in her bed and talking and eating and asking me to read her a story. I've told that story many times since to people who are afraid of the future. I want them to know that their shepherd is with them every step of the way. I want them to be able to say, even though I walk through the dark valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because you are with me. And I want you to be able to say that too. Principle number 5. If I'm a shepherd, it's because I make allowance for the special needs of the sheep. I told you the story of a girl that I ran into at Walmart one day. And I told you that despite the fact that I'd never met her before, I'd never seen her before, she smiled at me. So I asked how she was. And with tears welling up in her eyes, she blurted out, "Well, you know, we had to call off the wedding." I was shocked at how abruptly she had shared something so personal, so intimate with a complete stranger. But without telling her that I thought she'd confused me with someone else, I told her that I was sorry, and I asked her what happened. And she told me a very painful, tearful story about a love that had gone wrong. And I listened, and then I did my best to point her to the one who would never leave her, who would never stop loving her. And in the end, she hugged me and, still tearful, thanked me for listening. And faith came around the corner right at that very moment, just as she's walking away after that hug. And as the girl walked away, I told her, kind of in my defense, that girl thinks she knows me. That's what was behind that random hug here in Walmart. And Faith went on to say, "Of course she knows you. That's so-and-so. She told me her name and told me her parents' names, and she knows stuff like that. I envy that to this day." But she told me her parents' names, and then she said, "Well, she's getting married next month to, you know, so." And I said, "No, they had to call off the wedding." And then it was Faith's turn to ask me what had happened. You know, why would that happen? But now, I know that some of you may have been thinking that I should have been honest with her and told her that I had no idea who she was, but the truth is, I knew that she wasn't looking for me. She was looking for her shepherd, and she had wandered into my pasture. That's all that happened that day. She was looking for someone who would speak truth that would meet her need. She was looking for her shepherd. And it was my privilege to be able to be an extension of the Good Shepherd in her life that day and share with her the truth, the absolute truth, that the shepherd of her soul carried a rod and a staff and knew how to use them to meet the deepest needs of her heart. And that's something that you can do as well. Principle number 6, if I'm a shepherd, it's because I protect the sheep. To illustrate this principle, oh my goodness, who's doing that to the... To illustrate this principle, I told you a story about an almost 20-foot python. I don't know if you were here that day, but the snake is living down by the river and had apparently killed and eaten 2 of the dogs that were there in the village in the weeks before he and I met. And I found out later, much later, that a snake that size can actually kill and eat, or at least partially eat, a full-size human. And I'm not going to tell that story again because it was hair-raising, even for me. But I'm glad that I killed this snake because it gave me a story to tell. I love telling it. My grandkids, every now and again, when we're sitting with other people, will say, "Papa, tell that story about the snake." But the snake prevented us from doing the work. He interrupted the work. And in the end, it took all of us to kill the snake. And the same thing is true of the enemy of our souls today. He does the same thing. He shows up unannounced. He keeps us from doing what we're supposed to be doing, and often it takes all of us working together to defeat him. But if you're a shepherd today and you have other sheep under your care, then you have the privilege of taking on the enemy of their souls on their behalf to protect the sheep from the danger of the devil's attacks. And as a shepherd, I want to be able to say confidently to my shepherd, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And I want the sheep under my care to be able to say that about me as I represent the true shepherd by shepherding them. And I hope you want the same thing. Principle number 7. If I'm a shepherd, it's because I take care of the sheep without regard to what it might be costing me personally. I told you the story in this context of a couple, a family, friends of ours who lost their 21-year-old son. Faith and I were living there in the Philippines, and we got this word that this young man was missing, and then a few weeks later we heard that he had been murdered. That was partway through our term over there in the Philippines, and we weren't able to sit down with the family during that stretch of time. But when we returned to the States on home assignment, we made arrangements to visit with them. They invited us up to their house, and we visited with them shortly after we got back to New England. And after they served us supper, and we asked them to tell us the story, to begin at the part where he went missing, where he disappeared, and tell us everything that happened in it. I'm telling you, it was painfully expensive to sit and listen to them tell that story. There were no dry eyes for the rest of us that evening as we did all that we could to soothe them in the midst of their pain. Soothing oil is needed everywhere we turn, especially in the year 2020. David said to his shepherd, "You anoint my head with oil." And I need to remind myself that's what my shepherd does. And I need to allow that oil to overflow into the lives of others around me. That's something that we all need. Principle number 8. If I'm a shepherd, it's because I serve the sheep out of the overflow of the love that I have for Christ. We're living in the Philippines, and we had temporarily moved to Manila to take on the job of field chairman. I was on my motorcycle one day, and I drove by this guy who was sitting on a curb having a very animated conversation with his dog. It looked like he was arguing with his dog and might actually be losing the argument, but I intended to just drive right past because he was with a different organization. I didn't recognize him, didn't know who he was. I tried to tell myself I have no responsibility for this guy. I'm just going to get to the office and take care of the people that I'm supposed to take care of, but the further I drove toward the office, the clearer the voice of my shepherd rang in the depths of my heart, and it seemed that Jesus was having the same conversation with me that he had with Peter sitting on the shores of the lake so long ago. "Jay, do you love me?" Jesus seemed to be saying, "Lord, you know that I love you. Then feed my sheep and take care of them." I turned around and found the guy sitting right where he had been when I first drove by. I sat down next to him on the curb, and through bitter tears, he told me that he was leaving the Philippines because he was tired of the ingrateful people that don't appreciate the ministry that I'm... I mean, he was really worked up, and then I understood why the dog had such a concerned look on his face as he'd had it. I mean, he had just had it, and he's already gotten in touch with the travel agent, and he's headed home. I'm done with this. And it took several weeks later before I discovered that he never did leave, that God worked in his heart, And we use that story to illustrate what we mean when we say that we serve the sheep because we love the shepherd. Jesus didn't ask us to take care of the sheep because we love them. He asked us to take care of the sheep because we love him. If I'm a shepherd, it's because I serve the sheep out of the overflow of the love that I have for Christ. David put it this way, "My cup overflows." Principle number 9, I'm very nearly done. I will be finished by 1. My mother told a story about a little 8-year-old son that she had who was mentally challenged. He was mentally impaired. He just wasn't able to keep up. He'd been tracked with the normal kids, the normal students in his school, but he's so very limited that he wasn't able to do normal schoolwork. And the other students, as you can imagine, as you can guess, tended to be very unkind to him simply because he was so different. It's Valentine's Day, and he'd spent the whole night before making a Valentine for every one of his classmates there in that class. And as his mom sent him away to school that morning, she was afraid that he might not get a Valentine from some of the kids in the class because they knew that he was different. Her worst fears were realized when he came in from school and walked right past her there in the kitchen. And all he said, he was repeating it to himself as he walked down the hall. Not one, not a single one. Not one, not a single one. With tears in her eyes, she followed him into his room. And she's armed with fresh milk, cold milk, and freshly baked cookies. And as she walked into the room, he smiled at her and he said, Mom, I gave a Valentine to every one of the kids in my class. I didn't forget one, not a single one. As his shepherd, his mom had been worried that he wouldn't get a Valentine. And as a young boy with a shepherd's heart, he had been concerned that he might forget to give someone a Valentine. It scattered love and goodness in his wake instead of getting back at the other kids for what they had left behind in their wakes. That's the heart of a shepherd. Because a shepherd loves the sheep and is good to them. David wrote, surely your goodness and love, hold on, that's not supposed to be there. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. And I have to ask, are you leaving goodness and love behind you in your wake? And principle number 10, you can tell we're getting close. If I'm a shepherd, it's because I wait for the chief shepherd to return and look forward to my reward. Last week, I told you the story about an old missionary who had served in Africa in the late 1800s and early 1900s. He'd gone to Africa with his wife and two kids and returned to New York Harbor alone, having lost his wife and two kids to the harshness of Africa. On his return to the States, there was no one waiting at the ship on the dock there to greet him. There was no one there to welcome him. There were no cheering crowds. There were no brass bands. And so he finally set himself up in a rundown hotel for the night, and heartbroken, he prayed before he crawled into bed, Father, I'm sorry to say this to you, but I think I deserve a better welcome home than the one that I received. And God was quick to respond in the depths of this old missionary's heart. My son, he said, God, you do deserve an excellent and outrageous welcome home. But son, you have to remember, you're not home yet. It was God's idea to reward us for our service. And at least in one case, the word of God is quite specific. Someday the chief shepherd will appear, he'll return, and he will give the crown of glory to those who have shepherded God's sheep on his behalf. That's not something you want to miss. That is not something you want to miss. So be diligent as you shepherd the sheep under your care. Because if I'm a shepherd, it's because I wait for the return of the chief shepherd and look forward to my reward. And David put it this way in Psalm 23, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So we draw this series to a close, and we really are at this point. If we draw the series to a close, I want to remind you of the day that young David took on Goliath in the Valley of Elah. He had faced that giant because he was aware of the needs of the soldiers gathered behind him, was quick to meet those needs. As he did that, he eased their burdens and kept the entire nation on course for the glory of God. Every man there was afraid of Goliath, but they were able to take comfort because of David's willingness to stand when they couldn't stand. At the same time, David made allowance for the needless fear of the sheep when he walked into that dark valley of the shadow of death for them that day. David knew that there was no reason to be afraid of Goliath, but he protected the nation from their enemies rather than rebuking them for their fear. It didn't matter to David what it might cost him personally, because his heart was overflowing with love and reverence for the one who was shepherding him. David left a legacy of goodness and love in his wake and eventually went home to his reward. David did all of those things because, well, that's what a shepherd does. We've said it often. Every one of us here this morning is a shepherd. We have children, we have a spouse, we have friends, we have colleagues, we have associates, we have acquaintances, we have other people in our lives who are in need. Hey, recognizing that you are a shepherd, are you allowing the chief shepherd to bring your heart into sync with his? If you are, oh, listen, if you are, then we have his promise that when he comes back, he will give you the crown of glory that will never fade away. Will you stand with me in the presence? Father, thank you for the patience of these good folks this morning, or at least what I took to be patience. pray, God, that you would work in our hearts and help us to understand that simply sitting and listening or studying the Word or gathering principles is not the thing that changes our lives. Our lives are changed because of decisions that we make on a daily basis. God, a lot of these folks here have memorized the 23rd Psalm. They've committed it to heart. They've hidden it away in the depths of their heart. I pray, God, that you would bring those truths up to them in the days that lie ahead so that they can understand how you shepherd them. And equally importantly, God, they can understand how to shepherd others, because we all need that, God. Every one of us does. Because the Lord is my shepherd, I have everything that I need. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the dark valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because you, Lord, are with us. Your rod and your staff comfort us. You prepare a table before us in the presence of our enemies. You anoint our heads with oil, and our cups overflow. Surely, your goodness and your love will follow us all the days of our lives, and we will dwell in the house of the Lord, your house, forever. Amen and amen. God bless you as you head out there. Keep in mind that we've gotten together, we've huddled up, we've discussed the play, we're heading out, but this play doesn't apply just to this week coming up. It applies to all of the rest of this year and 2021 as well. So draw these principles into your life. Memorize it if you haven't. Remember it if you have. God bless you as you head out in that direction. Ready? Ready. Go get them, Potter's House.